We've got Dennis Desmond with us right now, who's going to talk to us about all things hacky and all things about cybersecurity. Jade's salivating over this. Dennis, welcome.
Good morning, Dr. Dennis.
Thank you. Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Well, Dennis, I'm a bit scared about the dark web, to be honest, because it seems like a place that you wouldn't go for any good reason.
Well, there are good reasons for some folks to go out there and visit content on the darknet or darknet website. Where countries restrict freedom of speech, prohibit certain kinds of material, books, and even for Western intelligence agencies to recruit assets and sources. There's some viable content out there. The unfortunate thing is that there are also a lot of darknet marketplaces that sell drugs, weapons, pornography, and stolen identity credentials.
Now, Dr. Dennis, explain the dark web. Apparently, most of the internet is dark, and the stuff you can access on there is not through a www.domain name. You have to actually know all the numbers to get those specific sites, don't you?
Yes, a little bit different. So the surface net, the internet, is massive. It's huge. In fact, it's really difficult to even determine how many websites and file folders and devices are out on the surface net. Within the surface net, there's something called the deep web. The deep web are all those restricted, pay-to-play, private networks, classified networks that, you know, normal people, you and I, can't access. That data typically is not indexed and not easily accessible unless you've got a username and password or you've got authorization. Within the deep web, there's a smaller section known as the darknet or onion net. There's also some other kinds of darknets that people can access. But the onion net is probably the most well-known, and this is where the darknet marketplaces reside, where bad guys basically buy and sell drugs,
You know,
different kinds of illicit materials. And it's an encrypted network. You can't access it without having what's called an onion router browser or a Tor browser that's enabled, or a special kind of proxy that allows you to gain access.
What percentage of people do you think have been on the dark web?
Very small. I would be surprised if, you know, anywhere near 1%.
Right.
Of internet users have even visited darknet sites.
I can understand why. And you were saying before that it's a place for Western, civilizations, Western countries to recruit people. What did you mean by that, Dr. Dennis?
Well, you know, it's actually the CIA's got a really nice site.
No, it does not.
Serious. You can go out to the CIA website and read all of their different articles. But you can also click on a button and volunteer to work or apply for to work for the CIA.
I've got a CV I can send if you want.
Oh, gosh, I've just lost my co-host. That's what he wants to do. So he'll have a new job come Monday.
Now, Dr. Dennis, you've been looking at the whole Medibank drama that's just taking Australia by storm. I mean, I love how the government's jumping up and down saying we can't let this stand, something's got to be done. But the reality is nothing can be done. Once that information's unleashed into the world, that is it.
Yeah, and that's a problem. I think that what we're looking here with the new task force that they talked about, which combines AFP and Australian Signals, is going to be able to thwart would-be hackers, possibly take down their sites, their websites, their blogs, target them maybe through denial-of-service attacks and attack networks, and keep them from operating. But you're absolutely correct. Once data is escaped into the wild, it's pretty much available to anyone who wants to view it.
And what's the purpose of releasing it? Is it just for money? Are we talking about money here, Dr. Dennis?
Well, in looking at the Our Evil blog this morning, they have been trying to tighten the screws on Medibank to pay the ransomware. Our Evil is known for using what's called ransomware as a service, developing affiliates to target different kinds of sites. And in this case, they just released a new file yesterday called Psycho 1 that purports to have the psychiatric and psychological treatment of patients. Their intent is to embarrass and pressure Medibank into paying that ransom.
Isn't that awful?
And they've threatened to release more files on Friday if Medibank doesn't pay by Wednesday.
Sorry, what did you say the name of it was? Our Evil. Is that what you said?
Our Evil. Ransomware Evil is, and they've been around for a while. What's crazy is the Federal Security Service, FSB of Russia, claims that they actually took the group down and basically got rid of them. But, of course, as we've seen, they've reemerged and they're back in business.
So their aim is to try and extort and make money. The reality is, though, you know, we're now saying we've got to tighten up on our security on our home and business servers. I mean, is that really possible? Can we lock down any of our public accounts so no one can hack them? Is it possible?
It's possible, but highly unlikely, and here's why. Remember, good guys have to be right all the time. They always have to be at the top of their game.
Mm-hmm.
Bad guys only have to be right once to gain access to a network. And what we're seeing with certain countries is the use of social engineering. So even if your network is locked down, even if you've got great security and very stringent controls, if an employee is socially engineered into giving up their identity credentials or access, all that network security goes out the window. And that is a huge problem.
So places like Medibank that you would think would be at the fore of cutting-edge technology to protect their members has to do what in future to prevent this from happening again? Or is that horse bolted and, you know, basically their the trust in a company like this is gone?
No. Sure, certain, you know, folks are going to be very upset and are going to be very, concerned about the privacy, about the security of their data. For an organization to go through this, they are going to learn a lot of lessons. There's a general rule in cybersecurity that there's two kinds of organizations, those that have been hacked and those who are going to be hacked.
All right, okay.
And there's nothing in the middle.
Right.
And so they're going to improve their security. The government likely will step in. Fortunately, ASD was able to notify Medibank that they were under attack and that they would likely be victimized soon, which was a huge help. And I think that that sort of public-private partnerships in the future are going to be critical in order to protecting our data. I think that, you know, the Australian government working to support those private companies to provide intelligence, to provide threat warnings and threat intelligence is going to be critical in the future. And I really see that as a very positive step.
Now, you've worked in the the cybersecurity field for a long time, not only for you know, USC now, but certainly for the American government. Literally, how protected is Australia from a massive attack? I'm talking attacking our water treatment systems, our electricity grid. If someone was that vicious, could they bring it down and literally bring the country to a halt, or is that just movie fantasy?
No, it's absolutely possible, unfortunately. And it's because of how the critical infrastructure systems are maintained. Now, Australia has been moving towards identifying those critical infrastructure systems, which are more often than not run by private companies, and working with them to secure their systems. But unfortunately, many of these systems are out of date. They're running old operating systems, old software, and they may not have spent the resources they need to adequately secure them. And that is problematic.
Mm.
Fortunately, there are also several universities who are examining these threats and the vulnerabilities and working to help these companies safeguard the systems.
Dr. Dennis, now we've seen a huge company like Medibank be affected like this. On a personal level, if people had sensitive information on their phones, if they had nudes, if they had anything that might embarrass them in a public setting, do you think that's a safe place to store private information, or should everybody be really concerned about what they're storing on their phones or their computers at home?
Well, you know, not talking about illegal material, notwithstanding, sensitive and private data. Now, most phones have a level of encryption on them that pretty much protect them and safeguard them.
Mm-hmm.
It's when people allow unauthorized access to those devices that it becomes problematic. I'm a big believer in encryption. I teach cryptography at the university.
Wow.
And so I'm a big believer in encrypting data at rest, encrypting data in transit, mm-hmm. and using encrypted mail extensions or products that improve the security of the data. And I think if you have data on your home system or on a phone or an iPad or tablet, that you do consider using some sort of encrypted extension or encrypted application to protect that data.
Wow. So there is stuff out there. We just have to become more familiar with it, I think.
Absolutely. There's some great products out there that are free. If you keep your sensitive data on a removable drive, don't keep it on your C drive. Keep it on a removable drive that's encrypted. So in the event there's an issue, basically it turns into a brick when it's disconnected.
That's
right. Again, you keep it separate and apart from your day-to-day activities.
I think, Dr. Dennis, the biggest problem we have in this country is that too many people in too many workplaces, you've got always that one or two idiots that will sit there and surf the net, you know, with eBay and play games, and this is where the vulnerabilities occur. Companies have to lock down maybe some of that more frivolous stuff by putting up, I know we've had a time at our company where we had this content keeper thing where you could only get through to the internet through passwords and you're only allowed certain sites. Maybe we now have to get to a situation where we lock down every single thing and have password access for everything we need to access, even if it's a news.com site.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the challenges, of course, is people going out to gambling sites, porn sites, any type of resale sites that, you know, may unfortunately have hostile links or download malware. But it's not just that. It's also incoming emails. Phishing attacks or phishing attacks through SMS are huge threats to employees within a company. And it's a way to bypass the cybersecurity protocols and processes that a company has in place. Therefore, there needs to be a very comprehensive management and monitoring of any communications or activities coming into or out of the organization.
Dr. Dennis Desmond, you have made a very difficult and tricky subject much easier to understand. We really appreciate your time this morning because we know that this whole Medibank thing has gone over most people's heads, except to say, perhaps instill a little bit of fear about your private information. But we really appreciate you clearing it all up for us this morning.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And stop leaving the work experience students on your computers at work.